This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Speak Up Effective Communication, the show on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network, focused on our communication and our leadership skills, specifically elevating those skills. I'm your host, Craig O'Neill, and in our episode today, we're talking about the collapse of felt obligation. And to do this, I want to take you to an airport. In fact, as you're listening to this episode, I'm probably steeped in thought on this very topic as I face a 20-hour itinerary going to Brisbane, Australia to see my friends at Jack's Tires and Automotive. So, hey, I'm looking forward to that. But hey, and this episode was actually inspired by my recent trip visiting my friends at Christian Brothers Automotive in San Antonio. This was my fourth trip of the year already, third one to Texas. I saw Dallas, and then I went to Overland Park for Vision, and then Houston and San Antonio. So most of the major cities in Texas, I have opinions on all of them. No. It's not a bad travel sequence. It's busy spring, though. And I'm going to say that's not a complaint in any way for me, especially some of you who know my earlier stories from the shop days. I used to do my vehicle road tests around the airport near us, International Airport. So it's modestly busy, but I considered myself blessed every time that I got to drive on that road and a plane would be landing right over the car. It's just from an aviation family that was always sighting. So when it's air travel season, I'm still the mindset, I get to do this. Flying's really neat. And I still love a window seat when I don't crave the extra space of the aisle. But as for airport crowds, I have to say this because I really appreciate the efficient, fast-paced walkers, well-dressed professionals, business folk on a mission. They're still there. They're out there, folks. But on this recent trip, that group was a little bit more outnumbered, I would say, by the vacationers. Vacationers, right? We've all been that person, hopefully. Meet a lot of people who don't travel by air, even on vacation sometimes, and really have barely even flown ever in their life. You got to check out an airport sometime because it's a hoot. It is such a fun place to watch people. The vacationers contains multitudes. You have stressed anxiety with aloofness. You have eagerness with no urgency at all. And you have casual comfort with complex confusion. It's wild. And what does that look like? Well, I saw a lady in what can only be described as pajamas with socks and Crocs, wearing a neck pillow, clutching a box of Garrett's popcorn while assertively telling a gate agent something related to what I can only presume is a complication with their itinerary. It's really hard for me not to chuckle at the scene of seeing this professional agent, in this case, doing their absolute utmost to treat that person there in front of them with all the respect they as a human deserve, but really don't based on their presentation. The way they were dressed, the way they look, they would never get respect if they were dressed like that anyplace else is all that I could think. And again, I don't want to sound judgy or complainy or anything. I love people. And look, if any of you resemble that sock and Croc combo, well, I'm sorry, but we do need to talk. But my point here is actually that airports are just a great people watching venue on this planet. And I do find behavior fascinating. And it can be fun for me, at least, to let my mind go into an analytical mode and let's call it a data rich environment. But hey, what I've already described, that's not uncommon in an airport, but I did see in this recent trip, I felt like it was a little bit more of a pattern combined with some other things. And it's my belief here that what I was observing in the airport most recently, it doesn't actually stay in the airport. I believe that our society has broadly been experiencing what I will call a collapse of felt obligation. And before we get more into that, we're going to introduce the word of the day for today's episode. And the word of the day is dapper. And if I've used that one and you can find which episode I might have used that on, you got to let me know and maybe we'll send you a t-shirt from the show or something like that. But the word dapper, I will define that word for you after we hear a word from our sponsors who make this show possible.
Autoflow is your partner in technology. With Autoflow, enhance your client interactions in a single thread
before, during, and after the visit. To see how AutoFlow makes it simple, visit AutoFlow.com. Your trusted companion, Shop Dog Marketing, is right by your side, attracting the best customers and building long-term growth. Call Shop Dog Marketing today or visit ShopDogMarketing.com. Unlock your communication insights with Inbound's AI-powered call analytics for auto repair shops. Learn more at callinbound.com. Want a more profitable shop? Start with your service advisor. They are the face of your business, the voice on the phone, and the key to every approved repair. ServiceAdvisorTraining.com is dedicated to giving them the tools and training they deserve. All right, we are back. Today's word is dapper, D-A-P-P-E-R. And this is defined as a neat and trim in dress and appearance, lively and brisk in movement or manner. To be dapper is to carry yourself with a quiet, intentional polish. Used in a sentence, the service advisor who greeted me was dapper. Pressed shirt, confident posture, and a presence that told me before he said a word that he took his work seriously. Now, I always like to throw in some etymology now too. The etymology on this one's worth noting because dapper actually traces back to Middle Dutch and Low German roots with the word dapper meaning strong, sturdy, and bold. It later evolved in English to carry the meaning of neat and well-dressed. So at its origin, dapper wasn't about vanity. It was about strength of presence. And there's something fitting about that for today's episode. And there's a photograph that I was looking at that really captures what I'm thinking about perfectly. Actually, there are a lot of them. Just look up images from the 1950s or 60s of passengers boarding commercial flights. You see men in suits. You see women in dresses and gloves, children dressed as though they're going somewhere that mattered. Now, what I want to be careful of here is this, because this isn't nostalgia. Those decades had serious problems. For example, the smoking on those flights, terrible. And I'm not suggesting we go back to white gloves and rigid social conformity. That is not the point I'm making here. The point is people dressed to fly, not because there was a rule requiring it, but because they understood that they were entering a shared public space that deserved something from them. The flight itself was treated as an occasion worth honoring, worth respecting. That is felt obligation, not forced, not mandated, specifically felt. And looking at the trend on the relaxation of this, research tells us that it began after World War II, and that's when returning soldiers, of course, they chose more casual clothing as a form of relief from the military formality, and I think they've absolutely earned that. That spread, however, through the youth culture in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, casual wear was now mainstream. What started as casual Fridays in workplace, eventually it expanded onto the fully casual workplaces and then into every shared public space you can possibly think of. And the relaxation wasn't random. It started as a deliberate resistance to the structure that was established. And the problem, as I see it, is that the resistance is what became the norm. And the original meaning is what we've lost. Now, simply stated, what was once a statement became a default. And somewhere in that transition, a generation started growing up without the felt sense that shared spaces place on the people inside them. Let me give you a different image. My kids, they go to a school that requires uniforms. It's not stiff or stuffy, like necessarily suit and tie type of uniforms. It's just blue polo shirts with collared shirts, at least. They can be a pullover even, but khakis, belt, shirt tucked in. It's pretty basic. General guidelines, but it is uniform. I admire it. And it's not just because of the clothes at all. It's not about the clothes. It's always about the principle that's behind it. And the principle is this: you have a role in making this space operate the way it is supposed to for the purpose that it serves. In that framing, the uniform is a daily physical reminder that you don't just show up for yourself. You showed up as a part of something, a group, and that something has a purpose worth respecting. One of the things I love about our school is that our girls don't have to worry about their clothing fashion like I hear from some of my friends who have kids in schools that don't have uniforms. So there's another positive element to this. And it's just interesting to me that people get picked on for their style or lack of it, even in an environment where expression is completely free and there is no compulsory element. Odd. Now, let's bring this all into our real world, because my coach, Bob Greenwood, I mention him probably all the time at this point. His words still echo with me all the time. And he influenced my thinking on this profoundly. He challenged the automotive service industry's default toward dark uniforms, for those of you that weren't aware of his opinion on this. And the logic behind the dark uniform is practical enough. We're anticipating dirt and grease, so we pick the darkest color we possibly can to hide it. Where are you going with this, Craig? Well, look, think about it this way. We're dressing for the mess before the day even starts, the same way some people are dressing for the discomfort that exists in air travel before the travel journey even starts. This is where it's going to tie in with communication as well, because what I think we're communicating and what Bob was keyed into is that before anyone walks through the door, before the first client interaction, the uniform is already saying, we expect to get dirty here and we've dressed accordingly. And go with me on this, because I don't want this to sound like a critique. I want this to sound like a growth opportunity here, because we're going to compare this to what doctors still wear today. That is a white coat. And one of the least practical garments imaginable for the work being done in medical environments where you're dealing with sick people, possibly bleeding people, anything else. Do they wear a soiled coat into the next patient interaction? No, they change between interactions when and as necessary. They have multiple garments because the presentation matters between every single encounter. And now here's something worth knowing about the white coat, because the history of it actually makes the point better than I can. And I went into this to see if what I assumed was even correct on this, and it was nearly spot on. And this is what I found. Before the late 1800s, doctors didn't wear white at all. They wore black. And the reason they wore black is exactly what you might guess. It hid the stains, blood, contaminants, the evidence of whatever came before you. Sound familiar? That is the dark automotive uniform logic applied to medicine centuries ago. The shift to white, this is really interesting, was deliberate. It was a statement. White was chosen specifically because it could not hide what happened. Any dirt, any contamination showed immediately. The coat became accountability made visible. It said, I'm prepared to meet you cleanly, and if I am not, you will know it. Oof. This is where this got really good, and you can see why I wanted to share it with you in this episode today. And researchers found that public sanitation improved in the mid to late 1800s. Tradespeople like butchers, bakers, they began adopting white uniforms for exactly this reason, to signal cleanliness to the people they were serving. Forward-thinking physicians followed that model, and patients responded to it. So the white coat was never really about looking nice. It was a promise made visible before anyone said a word. And the dark automotive uniform, well, that makes a promise too. Also, before anyone says a word. And gosh, you know, I was thinking about this as I've been used car shopping, and shoot, you go in some of these cars that have bad smells and you hop in that and I still smell it on me. And we sometimes forget that we're carrying some of those contaminants into each and every subsequent vehicle there too. You would never want to see that with a doctor, ever. What if a doctor walked into the waiting room wearing a red coat? I don't know. He expects to get bloody. It'd be pretty odd. But look, the same principle, I feel like it applies to service advisors. A service advisor in clean slacks and a button-down shirt's going to be communicating something before they ever even say a word. They're signaling that the transaction matters, that the person they're meeting with matters, and that they showed up accordingly. Compare that to a dark uniform or sweatshirt with a rock band on it. Not a bad person, but the felt obligation to this space and the client isn't being expressed if that dress code isn't there. And clients will read however you present yourself, even if they cannot articulate it. It's time for today's Suck Less Spotlight from Autoflow. Today's spotlight is on advisor eye twitches. Listen, clients like to stay informed throughout the repair process, and studies indicate clients are most satisfied receiving text updates versus phone calls. But call you they will, interrupting everything from estimating to quality conversations and your game of solitaire. That is, unless you text them first using AutoFlow. With AutoFlow's automated text update, your phone only rings for the right reasons. That way, with less phone interruptions, your eye twitch will definitely suck less. For this and more things that could suck less, visit AutoFlow.com. Want to see your auto repair shop thrive? Are you looking to drive more customers to your auto repair shop? Let ShopDog Marketing be your guide. Our customer-first approach, combined with AI-driven creative content, ensures top rankings. Dominate mobile-first and voice search with our specialized expertise. Reach out to ShopDog Marketing today and start growing your business. Don't miss out on this chance to boost your business. Visit ShopDogMarketing.com. Inbound has exclusively served independent auto repair shops with expert communication solutions for years. Now, our robust VoIP platform ensures you stay connected while our industry-leading AI analytics take your business to the next level. We provide the tools you need to understand your customers and optimize every interaction. Choose Inbound. For proven expertise and unmatched innovation, visit callinbound.com and discover the difference we can make. What if you knew exactly what to say to the price shopper, the upset customer, the person who says they cannot afford it? Every day, service advisors lose customers not because of bad service, but because of the wrong words at the wrong moment. Words That Work is a free phone scripts playbook built for auto service professionals. Every script includes the reasoning behind it, so you understand not just what to say, but why it works. Grab your free copy at serviceadvisortraining.com. If you make this shift, like Carm Capriotto, we have The Rise. He's talked about this topic a great deal. So if a mechanical specialist shows up clean, bright, and professional, something unexpected can happen now in this interaction. The way we dress can affect behavior. It can do it both positively and negatively. In either case, when someone's outside of a social norm, it will appear surprising. So the client could be very uncomfortable suddenly if you make this change, but in a very good way. Why? Right? Because the automotive service facility has its own established norm, and that norm in many clients' minds and their presupposed ideas, it's grimy. The dark shirts that we maybe have low expectations. It's the Hollywood mechanic scene reinforced by our presentation. So when a professional presentation doesn't match that expectation, it becomes the norm violation. The client is the one jarred now. They don't quite know what to do with this. And you might be thinking, well, yeah, we don't want to jar the client. Yes, you do. In this particular case, we absolutely do. What that discomfort is going to reveal is that the assumption they walked in with is no longer valid. They had a preloaded idea of what this space is supposed to be worth, and professional presence challenges that assumption directly without having to say anything at all. That's powerful. And this is exactly the tension that Carm Capriotto's initiative called The Rise is working to address. The Rise is an active movement to elevate the language, image, and perception of the automotive service profession. Mechanical specialist, automotive service facilities, clients. The terminology matters because the identity matters. But here's the challenge. You cannot rebrand a profession from the outside if the inside hasn't shifted. The resistance to that elevation isn't only coming from clients looking in. Some of it is coming from within the industry itself. So people inside the trade who are still dressing for the stereotype we're trying to leave behind, right? Still choosing that dark uniform, still conforming to an image that no longer serves the profession or the people in it. The environment that you create either cultivates or collapses felt obligation in the people inside it. And importantly, it sets the expectation for everyone who walks in the door. Let this stuff sort of sit with you a moment. All right. We've touched on a lot, and I want to give you another example. And this one is on the flight. There was a kid right in front of me. He was sort of kicking the seat in front of him, slamming backwards into his own chair. repeatedly and frequently, regularly throughout the flight. And the mother's response was just smiling at her kid, sort of shrugging it off and deliberately avoiding any eye contact with the people that are kind of like looking at her to see what she's going to do. I need to be very careful here because a kid acting out on a flight is completely expected. They're kids. That's not the story. The story is the mother modeling that the people around her don't require any attention or effort. I love this about flying. When I see little kids and whatnot, especially the experienced business travelers, again, I got to give props to the people out there that are going through the business traveler routine with integrity. There is an added effort to accommodate parents with young children all the time. I see an expression of sincere like sympathy and empathy for those parents, especially with the young children, because most of us who've been through that know how challenging that is. And I think that's one of the cool moments of humanity where you observe people expressing care and consideration to those folks. It's very hard to do when the parent is oblivious, aloof, or just doesn't seem to care that their kid is going off the rails or other things too. Different takes there. But my point here is that this particular kid I observed, he was old enough, knew better, and no other issues with the kid that I could perceive anyways. The kids are watching their parents. And I feel like what kids will absorb in those scenarios quietly, repeatedly, over the years is a worldview. And that's one that places the individual above shared space. Like, I can do anything I want. It doesn't matter about the people around me. And mom is modeling this. Risky thing. On the same trip, I actually had to ask a flight attendant to find whoever had their personal device playing audio without earbuds. Someone was on TikTok, audio was going, it was cranked up and could hear it over the music. And I'm trying to read a book and there's other people looking around too. We aren't quite sure where it's coming from. If it were my neighbor, I would have definitely told them myself, but that's a terrible thing. And if you had that going around the whole cabin, it would be cacophony. That would be really frustrating. But I thought that very strange that someone could contentedly sit and look at their phone with their volume on in a group of people and not think that would be an incourteous thing to do. Like, what happened? Why wouldn't that sense of an obligation to not do that exist in there? And that's really what I mean by this sense of this collapse of felt obligation. It isn't rudeness exactly. It's the slow generational transmission of a deep-seated individualism that is counterproductive to society. It's being inculcated, absorbed, normalized until it feels like this is just how things are. And that's sort of the argument that people will make. Oh, you shrug it off, just deal with it, sort of a thing. It's like, that's not good. It's not good. And nobody wants to have to be in a position to have to assert to someone, especially an adult, what proper behavior or conduct is like. It shouldn't be necessary. But you do, you see this everywhere. It's in movie theaters, public spaces, airports full of neck pillows and pajama pants, and the assumption that every other person in the room exists to accommodate you and your comfort or needs. There's a difference on this. And for shop owners and service professionals, I think this matters enormously because, hey, look, service drive, it's a shared space. The way a shop owner sets expectations for how their team shows up, uniform, posture, preparation, presence, it's either reinforcing felt obligation or quietly seeding it away. And you're either modeling something worth passing on, or it's like being the mother on the plane. You're just going to tolerate the behavior and not really express why it's perhaps better for everyone around you to have conduct another way. And I'm going to acknowledge another thing here because balance is really important. This is a topic that could be received right or wrong. I'm perfectly aware of that. And then I'm making a pretty direct challenge here on some simple principles. But like this, rigid social conformity is its own problem. And when norms become a suffocating burden, when obligation is more coerced rather than felt, we've gone in a different and equally damaging direction. And history has plenty of examples of that. And they aren't pretty either. But individual expression is real and it's valuable. The freedom to show up as yourself is a beautiful thing. And that's not what I'm arguing against. What I'm arguing for is the distinction between freedom and indifference, between choosing how to show up and simply expecting the room to absorb you. Felt obligation, by its definition, cannot be mandated. A dress code can require a uniform, but it cannot require the care behind it. What I'm describing lives in the interior. of this. It's a desire, a genuine want to consider others first, to honor the shared space you are operating within. You should want to consider others. That's the outcome I want you to sit with. So listen, in closing here, I just want to express there's a reason I wear a suit jacket and a button-down shirt with decent slacks when I travel. And I'm trying to keep that business casual presence alive in airports, at hotel registration desks, at airline kiosks, and every interaction along the way. It matters every single time. And I'm considerably sure that it changes the way I receive service from the people I interact with and the way that the people immediately around me experience the space. That's the irony here. I'm actually treated better by outwardly expressing respect for the people and the space that I'm in, just through appearance and conduct without even speaking. So I'm communicating that I am here deliberately, that I cared enough to prepare, that the people around me factored into my decision this morning. And if the compliment dapper lands my way ever, that means something. Honestly, not at roots, not vanity. To recognize strength and intention in presence. And that is something expert communicators can communicate before they ever open their mouth. Presence is the first message, and presence is a choice you make before you walk into any room. For you, that choice is available every single day. How you show up, how your team shows up, what your facility communicates before a single word is spoken. And look, I have a friend, a shop owner just up the street from me, Andy Polina. I was on an episode with him and Rick White way back on Carm Show at one point. Some of you may know him. Andy told me recently, it was great. I was getting my motorcycle tires pressure checked here before my last ride, before selling a motorcycle. Yeah, it's sold. It's another story. But Andy, while I was talking to him, he was talking about a job candidate who showed up for an interview dressed completely sloppy. And Andy sent him home and told him to come back dressed nice for the part. And I loved hearing that because Andy didn't just set a standard for a shop. He modeled a felt obligation and he gave that candidate a chance to rise to meet it. Felt obligation is binary in practice. You either carry it into a room or you don't. And the people around you, your clients, colleagues, kids watching their parents, they feel the difference whether they can name it or not. So here's the question I want to leave you with today. Are you showing up expecting acceptance or showing up offering consideration? Only one of those is felt obligation, and only one of them changes the room. I'll indirectly quote C.S. Lewis here as I wrap this up completely. The quote went something along the lines of one of his instructors had taught him is that something is either not important at all, or it is of the utmost importance. There's rarely that middle ground, if ever. I think that this is one of those topics. I think it's very important. And that's why I brought it to you today. So thank you so much for spending time with me on this. If this episode resonated with you, share it with someone in your world who you think carries that felt obligation into their work every day, or someone who needs a gentle nudge to start. Let me know. Please send me emails, speakup@craigoneill.net. That's O'Neill, O-N-E-I-L-L. And remember to listen up on the app to all the shows on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. You can go directly to that link. That is a simple URL, arpn.app, to get that app. That is arpn.app. And there you will be able to listen to Remarkable Results Radio with the Carm Capriato, Diagnosing the Aftermarket A through Z with Matt Fonslow, Business by the Numbers with Hunt Demarest, the Auto Repair Marketing Podcast with Brian and Kim Walker, and the Weekly Blitz with Coach Chris Cotton. And once again, thank you so much to our sponsors at Autoflow, ShopDog Marketing, Inbound, and ServiceAdvisorTraining.com. We really appreciate you supporting the show and the message that we bring to this industry. And thank you, our loyal listeners, for joining us. Now get out there, listen up, speak up, show up.
You've been listening to Speak Up, Effective Communication with Craig O'Neill on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. Download our exclusive podcast app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com because the best conversations in the industry start here. Check the show notes for Craig's YouTube channel and email. Let him know what topics you'd like him to speak up about. Yeah.